Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Jerica.
This is Keenan.
This is Matthew, and you are listening to the Glass House Podcast.
Welcome to the Glass House Podcast. There is nothing like it. We are back and we are live. You know what? We never really went anywhere. But you know, it's a whole pandemic outside. So, you know, we just chilled out for a while. We hope that you all have been getting your COVID tests and that you are vaccinated and that you are safe and that you are at home enjoying your family. Social distancing from your friends, because this is a serious thing out here. But guess what? It's Black History Month. We're starting off with a bang. It is the best time of the year. Black History Month for many of us is like Christmas in February. And so we want to start off with some power. Before then, let's talk about like how things have been, guys. Let's catch up, guys. How y'all doing?
Black, young, gifted, and black. No, I'm kidding, no. But this 2021, man, it's already been the start of a great year. And man, I'm so blessed that God, hallelujah, you know, as good as he is, praise the Lord. But man, seriously though, you guys, I can't think of a greater time to be alive, bro. As you guys know, I'm in the process of planning a wedding, me and Aaliyah. I should say Aaliyah's in the process of planning a wedding, but I'm co-signing, right? But no, it's an exciting time. It's an exciting time to be in love, man. It's an exciting time to have somebody as love you as much as she does as to me. And so, man, things are great. Christmas was amazing. New Year was even better. And 2021 is going to be a great year. So I'm excited about it. Man, if you're listening for the first time, this is season two. Don't worry about trying to catch up on season one. It's already out there. Catch up later. But welcome to season two of the Glass House Podcast. If you are a returning guest, returning family member of the Glass House Podcast, we want you to share this podcast with somebody because apparently you back, so I must be good. But yeah, man, season two about to be even more lit than season one. Keenan?
What's up, Brinson?
What's up? Man. 2021 has gone off to a great start.
We see you got a pink durag going, Doc.
Yeah, man. Listen, I went and got my hair cut today. My barber was like, "Man, your waves coming in." I said, "Oh,
I knew one time you was braiding, so I didn't know what was up. You was braiding them down."
Wow.
Pandemic first started, my coat was braiding them down, Doc.
Wow.
They starting petty on season two, boy. You
I mean, my boy is petty. Listen, I would ask him why he got that cap on his head.
He's trying to be like me, but you know I ain't got my cap on tonight, so you know.
You know I have a light spot in the center of my head. Praise God.
He got that light spot. Yeah, uh-huh.
I'll leave my friend alone, dog. He is bald now, dog.
Oh, good one. Go ahead, please. Ooh, keep going. Listen, please. All right. I get mad. Go ahead on.
Man, 2021 has been amazing thus far. Right now, I am a graduating senior at the...
Insert clap.
A part of the... affiliated with Morehouse School of Religion. And I'm getting my MDiv, my Master's of Divinity. So, yeah, man, I am super duper excited. And on May 8th, I will be graduating. So, yeah, that's my highlight for the beginning of this year. Yep.
Man, Brinson, thanks, man. And again, super excited about your graduation. And as you all have picked up by now, we are both in seminary and divinity school, and Brinson has survived. I say anybody who makes it through the MDiv program, no matter where it is, no matter what you're doing, you have wrestled with God. You are a champion. You have wrestled with God, and you won this time.
You know, you're right.
Congrats, brother. And we're going to be supporting, whether if it's virtual and in person, I'm going to be hollering for my friend.
Period. Are they drinking at your graduation party, Ken? I just want to know what to bring virtually. Praise God.
Well, water. I'm bringing my water, bro. Yeah.
He's a Christian this year. Go ahead. Oh, this year.
This year's been great. Hallelujah. Don't worry about what's in my cup. Right. Let me be quiet, bro. Yeah. So it was a wonderful 2020, man. And you know, peeps, I'm thankful for life and family. You know, we say all of those things like a cliche, but I, a lot of people that were close to me contracted COVID-19. Some people I knew lost their lives due to that, but a lot of people survived. And to be able to say that is a testimony to, you know, the goodness of God during this time, because many of you know some people who have died, and some of you have had COVID-19, and it's not necessarily because it's your fault or anything like that. This is just a terrible virus. And so I'm thankful for family and friends and love. Like Grady said, both of my friends on here, I'm thankful that they have healthy relationships. And so I'm thankful for all of those things. And I'm looking forward to 2021 being a year just to see the manifestation of so many things that I've sown. You know, and seeing reaping what I've toiled over, you know, even in the pandemic. And so I'm excited.
Come on, preacher.
I didn't try to reach y'all for
the manifestation of things that I've toiled over. He was talking with his hands.
You said it was going to be church on here, but we will.
No, it's that's rewarding.
But no, for real, man. And I mean, it's a beautiful thing just to be alive. And there is so much. And speaking of being alive, there is so much against us because of who we embody. You know, man, it is so serious and important to understand that your literal presence is a threat to somebody. You know, the color of your skin is a threat to someone, and people are afraid. Some women clutch their purses. Some men get testosterone out of nowhere, thinking that you are a threat because you're of the darker hue. And it is a serious thing. If you're a taller man or a petite woman, you know, it presents itself in different ways. And so today, we kind of want to dedicate this episode, My Black is Beautiful. And we want you to know, wherever you are, that your beautiful is black. And it's fine to be proud of that beauty in a society that teaches degradation and a society that operates within the confines of policing your blackness in everything that blackness is. I did a speech the other day. And I was just talking about like how every February we romanticize about black death, and we really don't work towards solutions, but we want to talk about what has gone wrong for black people and what is going wrong for black people. But no white person and no institution offers any substantial solution. So y'all help me out. What is it like for you, in your own words, being black in America? In these yet United States.
United States. No, I would say, man, that I would say that being black in America isn't a cue for an apology or an attempt to tell us we matter. Mm. Asking not to have the color of our skin be the factor in which we're stopped or pulled over by the police, is that too much to ask? Or to be whispered about at a social gathering because your black skin is a woman, mean you are to remain soft-spoken and never exuberantly to raise your voice without the label loud black lady. Mm-hmm. If the year 2020, man, reminded me of anything, bro, it showed me as a 24-year-old man that they will step on your neck and said you resisted arrest, that they will kick your door down without knocking or announcing, shoot you multiple times and say you had a warrant, but you never really had a parking ticket. They will charge one of four officers for the bullets that hit the neighbor's house, not the bullets that hit your body. And then sell out Daniel Cameron, will remind us that he's a black man, but instead perform like a house Negro in the early 1900s.
You are a coward You are a sellout, and you were used by the system to harm your own mama, your own black mama. We have no respect for you. No respect for your black skin. Because all of our skin folk ain't our kin folk, and you do not belong to black people at all.
Being black in America is simply a fight. But as Dr. King said, man, I've decided to stick with love because hate is too great a burden.
That's good, man.
Thank you, Matthew Gray.
Thank you for your speech, man. That's good, man. That's good. Listen to me. That's wonderful, man. You said some impactful things because it's so true. It's so true. We're so concerned about other things when the real problem has always been our blackness. That's been the problem. Every war is in some way tied to racism. Greed in some way in this country is tied to racism. You know, I was just reading something about today about Pentecostalism. White folks stole that too. Everything that white people got is in some way tied to racism. Brenton, talk to us.
Listen, I would say definitely for me, man, I really didn't start to come into my blackness fully, honestly, until I got to ITC, until I got into my master's program. And I went to a HBCU for college where we learned a lot about being black and blackness and all of that. But I don't think I really kind of stepped into it until I started to learn more. So I try to educate myself on, you know, our history, where we've honestly come from, not where the history book in my high school told me I came from, because that's not real, right? Like, so it's like trying to unfold these mysteries, because we're still a mystery, even though we know so much about black culture and about black people and about African Americans and, you know, all of that good stuff. We're still every day unfolding new things that are like coming alive, whether good or bad. And I think that's the hardest part for us to say, as much as there is good that we've done and all of that, all of the good that we had to do came because we were oppressed and we had to fight our way out of oppression. You know, so everything that we coin as, oh, that was great, that was good. Rosa Parks sat at the back of the bus and Martin Luther King did this and that, da, da, da. All of those things are great, but it's just the fact that we had to do that out of oppression. That's what hurts the most. That's what hurts.
I love what you said, Kenan, because oftentimes people don't think that the hurt is real because you didn't directly experience it. And so when I say that, people think racism was something of the past, and racism is still something of the present and something that's real. So when you say we had to, people listening to this podcast, I don't want you to eliminate your feelings based upon your lack of experience. Before King was marching in the 60s, Daddy King was protesting in the 30s. And you got to think generations before that, we were fighting just to be treated right. For the conversation, this is not a victim conversation. This is a conversation to simply say that at this current age, even though we're no longer labeled as 10th of a human being, there is still a great deal of racism that is stained, not just on America, but in Savannah, in Connecticut, in Texas. And us 24, 25, we feel it and we still see it. We see right through it. And people try to layer racism with, oh, but you have a middle class job. Oh, but you make more money. Oh, but you can get a degree and you can go to school. Right. What about the fact that when I was 18, I didn't get a job because I was dark skinned, right? What about, as I think when people think, when we say we went through, they think, oh, wait, you didn't go through it directly. Racism is not a matter of time elimination, but I think racism is a matter of generational experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the crux of what we experience every single day. You have to think about making wise decisions, you know, because any decision that you make that is not as wise as it could be can cost you your life. And that's how serious this thing is and how serious it's getting. Being Black in America, for me, being Black in America is almost like being a martyr for Christ, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, white people take biblical Christianity, not all, but most take biblical Christianity and say, Christ died, and I'm going to die for the sake of the gospel, and they're persecuting right. Christians, and they're doing this and doing that. Being Black is equivalent and it upheld just as much as dying for the cause of Christ. The reason why I say that is because being Black is an experience of death every day.
Yeah.
Being Black is an experience of death every day. Black people have to constantly be faced with the reality, the lingering reality, that not only am I going to maybe physically die today if I get pulled over, if I walk in a store, if I don't talk the right way, if I don't look the right way, if I ask the police officer a question, right? If I walk past the wrong white woman, right? Not physically dying, but being dead in some of these social sense, dead because we're the people in jail, right? Dead because we don't have enough to pay our bills. Dead because we don't have food for our children, right? Dead because right. we don't have masks right. installed, right? Dead because there's not a testing site in our neighborhood. It's on the other side of town, and you know I ain't got no car, right? So all of these things are systemic, right? And so for me, being Black is like sheep headed to a slaughter, right? Yeah. They've never cared about Black people because Black people have always been seen as a token and as a means of property, right? And we can sit here and praise, and I'm not going to do it, but people can sit and make up in their mind and praise a certain group of people who are doing what they're supposed to do, if they're white or otherwise. I don't need to praise them. They're supposed to be doing that, right? But the overwhelming majority of people in this country believe Donald Trump. The overwhelming majority of this country. Oh, well, they're good white people now, and that's cute, right? That's what they're supposed to be doing, but it's not the majority.
I don't believe every white person is racist.
I didn't say that, but I'm not going to praise them that are not, right? Because that's not the purpose. It's nothing funny about that. That's not the purpose of the
book. No, bro. But
the purpose that we must show is that the overwhelming majority still doesn't like your Black skin, still doesn't like your Black creativity, will do anything, right, to agree with the other side. Listen, if your Blackness was about you merely trying to praise those who did what they're supposed to do, right? Then we will all have medals of freedom, right? But there's not enough. King died because there were not enough people of the lighter hue who were committed to his freedom as they were their own privilege. And so being Black for me, I'm just talking about what my colleagues and what my friends talk about. Being Black is like going from sleep to slaughter. I'm done. Yeah.
No, I agree. Ken, I want you to chime in here. Because number one, we have to, I'm with you on that boat. But everybody that voted for Donald Trump wasn't white. You know, bro, and
right.
I think go ahead.
I understand what you're saying. That's so true. But the people who voted for Donald Trump voted for whiteness. Right?
No, I agree.
Whiteness is a larger concept that even Black people will have black face, but still be operating in whiteness.
Right? No, I agree.
So when I say white, I'm classifying white as whiteness. So if you're white, you have an upward advantage of operating in whiteness. And if you are Black and have no understanding or any type of any person of color or anything, right? Anything other than anything any person non-white, right, and you have no awareness, right, or you have no understanding, and some do, and they just choose not to believe
another report. They believe the report that's easier for them, right? We have a chief justice that sits on the Supreme Court, black man who went to Yale Law, and he believes the report of Donald Trump. But that's his choice. He knows what he's doing. He's from Savannah. He knows what he's doing, right?
Right. Well, yeah. Well, see, and I think
Herman,
now
Herman Cain, God rest his soul. But he knew exactly what he was doing.
He knew what he was doing.
From the post on social media, oh, we're not wearing masks. We're at the, you know, and he believed the report of racism and whiteness, and he stood with that. Is this Houston?
Yeah, dark? I think. Wait. Hold on. Give me 1 second. I think before we go further with this episode, we must let everybody know why Jericius feels the way he feels. Well, this is him 24/7.
Well, you need to know. Listen to this podcast. You need to know. Very passionate about the black experience in America. He is very passionate about the black experience in America. Now,
I got to put that out there.
To add a little bit of continuity to what Colin is saying, Keenan, I want you to chime in here, and I want you to speak to what it is to, like, when we think about what we've read and, you know, especially what Collins elaborates, not just past it, but presently, the present experience that we face and go through. Keenan, in your ideology, and particularly you work in a white space full time, that's not negative or positive. You know, you've been, God has blessed you. You work for where you are, right? But particularly where you are, Keenan, and all that you know as black people, do you really, how far do you think we've come and how much progress do you feel like we've made? And to add another question, I'm sorry, I had 3 questions. Do you feel like we as a current generation make black people look good? That was a 3 question situation. So let me back it up.
Oh, right? Man.
Do you think we've come far? Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been working in white spaces, predominantly white spaces, since my undergrad years. My first internship was at the biggest church in Savannah, Georgia, which happens to be a predominantly white church. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I went to a white organization about church. and now I'm at another white church. That's the United Methodist Church, you know. And I've experienced a lot through that, even that short time. But when I look at who we are as a people, as black people, for me, because my job is church, so I compare churches a lot. Like I compare how I see the operations done of the church that I attend or go to or are a part of, and then the one that I work at. And I see that there's totally 2 different worlds. There's totally 2 different worlds. There's totally 2 different communications. There's 2 different ways of how to operate certain things like that. I do believe that we have come a far way. I do believe we've come a far way in the sense of progression in our education. Don't get me wrong. I do believe.
Because we have more opportunities toward education, or do you feel like more black people are excelling in education?
I think more black people are excelling in education. I think more black people are tearing down that wall of, because don't get me wrong, at one point in time, getting a high school diploma was praised, right? And even to this day it is, right? But now we're breaking down the barrier of, all right, a high school diploma, that's good, that's fine, but go for that bachelor's, go for that associate's, go for that master's or whatever. And I think we're getting more success in people who want to be educated. Now, the way they get educated is a total different thing. But I think we have more people who actually want to get educated, even if that's through Google University. We sit and Google stuff all the time. We ask questions all the time. So I think we want to be educated. And I applaud that part. So I do believe we've come a far way. Now, us as a generation, do we make black people look good? Is that what you asked?
Get ready, Collins, because I want you to tag on that too. Like as this, you know, as you answer that question, Keenan, I'm thinking about when we think about this summer, all I saw was a bunch of pastors and preachers and activists. And when, you know, after George Floyd, everybody want to talk about being black. But now we're so dominated by impeachment and Kamala and, you know, Joey, yeah. You know, ain't nobody talking about being black no more. So as you talk, Keenan, do you, and the Collins jump on that as well at the beginning, do you think we make being black look good? Are we a great representation? I'm not talking about part-time black people.
I think our, this is all I'm going to say to it. I want Jerikis to handle this. But I think that.
Don't let him handle it, Doc. He's going to handle it,
Doc. I think that in past and previous tense, we always kind of had a leader to look up to in the black community. Worldwide.
You're right.
Worldwide. We always had a black leader to look up to. You know, rather that be Marcus Garvey or rather that be Malcolm X or rather that be, you know, whoever. We always had some kind of somebody to look up to. And I think now, who do we look up to? And if we do look up to some people, we know so much, or we can know so much, we want to look up the dirt they got going on before we look up
that's
the
so good
that they're trying
that's
to support.
That's so good, Keenan. That's so good. That's so good.
And I'm going to let Jericho handle the rest of that. But
no,
that's
that,
how
that
I
was
feel.
So good.
I feel
that's
like
so,
we don't
so
have
good.
A leader. We don't have
a leader. A leader is not without flaws, right? Like, King had flaws.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But we still praise him. You know what I'm saying? If we divide between what we feel like, I think most of our times we let our spirituality defect our skin. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying what you believe change what you do, but I'm saying you realize you can't take off your skin. You know what I'm saying? So, right. Well, Kang was a Christian, but he smoked cigarettes. Well, you smoke weed. You know what I'm saying? Right. So it's like, y'all talking, Kang like women. You like a lot of women. You know what I'm saying? So we get so much like, as and what you said, what's wrong with us being the leader, right? Like, why are we waiting for somebody to get a certain level of fame? Charlamagne the God, every time he talk about wearing your blackness. Well, what you do for black people? You know what I'm saying? Right. So it's like, go ahead, Collins. Elaborate on that.
And,
we got 10 minutes left. Go ahead. I don't know how we got here, but
and
go
I think, and I think we might got to get an extra 10. And I think that, and I think an important.
Oh, now he want to extend the time, huh? Any other time, 35 minutes. Go ahead.
But I think that. One thing I will say about morals and leaders and all of that, I really think that there's a difference between mistakes and ethics. Some of the leaders in our current generation, I'm thinking of a pastor in particular. I won't say the pastor's name, but this pastor has a crisis of ethics, not mistakes, right?
Yeah.
Because an ethical crisis is a crisis that you have made a norm in your life, right?
You're right.
You just don't sleep with women. You don't respect women.
Mm. Right?
You just don't.
There.
You just don't go around cussing people out because you're having a bad day. You don't respect other folk. That's an ethical issue, right? It's a more deep thing. So that's what I would say about that. And I do think that this generation. Especially us being millennials, Z-ish, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on what angle you're looking on it from, Generation Z is post-institutional, right? They don't believe in institutions. Not because they're so, we want to leave the church, so institutions like the church and certain institutions like school and all those things.
Right.
They're highly educated, but they want to create new systems. They want to abolish, right, what we have had. It's not, you know, one thing that somebody told me, you know, because you often hear that people say, oh, people are getting worse and worse. These kids are getting worse and worse every year. They blah, 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 blah. And a wise person once told me, I never forgot this. A wise person once told me, they said the reason why a generation is reluctant to do something of the past generation is because the past generation made them that way. Right? The reason why Generation Z is post-institutional, it's because the institution is trash. It's not.
So why can't we as black people reframe the institution? Why are we waiting on another institution to be restored?
Well, I think that's what people are trying to do. So when you see people in the streets and when you see them marching and then when you see people protesting and even when you see people with varying views on voting and not, right? This is a way to say, we're trying to create a new system. But it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be normal, right? And so we have to reimagine, right, what it means to be Black in the wake of a pandemic and in the wake of some of the most extreme times it means to be Black, right? That Blackness is more, that your Blackness goes beyond your manhood, right?
Yeah.
That your Blackness goes beyond so many things that you think hold you together. Those things hold you to whiteness, right? So it's a reimagining in a new creation of Blackness. So do I think that this generation is representing Blackness? Well, I think they are. I think that we have some of the most brightest minds that we've ever seen, right? I think that we have some of the most revolutionary minds that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
But it's forcing us to, number one, get out of our comfort zone, right? Because everybody's not going to look like you, right? Everybody's not going to talk like you and come from your church, right? Now, that's the big thing, right? Because you think that everybody's supposed to come to your church. If you are still in the place where you think people got to believe like you and you're going to send them to hell, we'll meet you there, right? Because we're going to do what we want to do, right?
Yeah.
We're not there anymore. That was a time when people got scared and said, oh, I'm going to run back. Yeah. You send me to hell, I'll meet you there, right? So you're still there. Their Blackness is sinful. Their Blackness is, see, and those are the things that this generation is trying to, like you said, Grady, God, you want to talk about somebody drinking and stuff, and you drink like a whale, right?
Not a whale.
Because you know deep down inside of you, there's really nothing wrong with this. This is what you've been taught, right? And so we have to reposition what it means. To be Black does not mean to be a holy roller, right?
Particularly in Christian contexts, yeah.
Right, your relationship with God is great, and you having a good suit, wonderful. You know, white people love that, right? You haven't always been fresh, right? Well, I can't wear braids. That has nothing to do with your Blackness, but your Blackness is something. An experience that you have been forced. Howard Thurman talks about the inward journey. You have been forced to make your inward journey and your inward parts become visible on the outside because life forces upon the most vulnerable parts of you because you're Black, right? And so I think that this generation are some of the most inspiring people. I met a young man who's going to Morehouse College, going to my great alma mater. He's going to be a freshman. And I tell you, I'm so encouraged. I'm so encouraged because he's a senior. Boy, you think the boy's like 24. He's a senior, but he's already read Thurman. And he's already read King. And he's already read James Baldwin. And I said, you're what now? Right? These are fundamental texts at the college. And it encouraged me. And I told him, I said, guess what? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy you not one book, but I'm going to buy you two books. And whatever you need, you let me know. You let me know what you need. And if I can
do it. So now he's doing scholarships for Black people, right?
y'all know, and by the way, y'all know I have a scholarship. I'm trying to give back as much as I can. So
that's amazing,
but,
man.
But it's encouraging to me, man. But we have to reimagine, right? I think one of the greatest things I love you guys for, and I'm going to stop. One of the greatest things I love you guys for is that y'all are some of the most creative people I know, right? And I really believe that in this season, I mean to go here, I really believe that in this season, God is resting the hands of those who are willing to be creative, right? And those who are willing to think outside of the box, right? Through your creativity, you can reach so many more people, right?
Yeah.
Than through your conforming, right? Through you conforming, you only reach a certain level of people, right? But through you stepping out of the box and moving yourself, I mean, not waiting on a sign, but saying, I'm going to take this leap of faith and do something totally different, right? I think God will bless it. And that's why I love you guys, because I know you're some of the most creative people I know. And God can use that. And so I think this is one of the greatest generation of Black minds and Black creativity. The young lady who spoke at the inauguration, she's not a Maya Angelou. She's going to go beyond Maya. It's not about being a king and a Maya. It's about going beyond that.
Where you just went, Collins, I think it's so prone, especially for somebody like you, Keenan, you know, who is a full-time youth pastor. You know, what you just said, Collins, you said sometimes our goal and our margin is set to go to where someone else went and not to go beyond where they went.
Yeah.
Right? And I think a lot of times we're not pouring a lot into this up and coming generation, particularly ourselves. We're not giving back to those coming behind us because we're so focused on trying to birth out the next Dr. K. Mm. You know, we're so busy trying to produce the next Rosa Parks. You know what I'm saying? It's been proven that more whites use public busing than African Americans in certain predominant neighborhoods. So, you know, we're trying to reproduce things that have already passed. So, Keenan, in particular, like, what do you think are ways in which we can really start preparing people, as Collins say, to go beyond? Like, because as long as you on this God green earth and you got this black skin, the goal is not to be, but the goal is to go beyond. So, Keenan, what are ways, effective ways you think? By the way, we got to wrap this up, y'all. But if you guys are enjoying this conversation, don't forget to leave a review. But yeah, Keenan, what are ways you think we can prepare the generation to go beyond?
I think the first thing we must do definitely is we have to change the way we teach our next generation, right?
So good.
We have to because in order for us to continue to progress and move, the certain things that our parents taught us, honestly, y'all, it wasn't right.
Yeah,
certain
right.
ways, certain parenting ways, certain parenting ways, that. Certain ways that we spoke to one another, that the conversations that were allowed around us, and stuff, it wasn't right. So yeah. the only way that we can help the next generation is to do it differently. You know, yeah. Challenge it. We're so afraid to challenge what came before us. And that's the first thing we got to do, is that we have to break down that wall to say, I can challenge it.
Because you have to realize, Keenan, that a portion of the people we admire had to make a lot of compromise. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of them had to compromise a lot of values, ethics, and standards for us to be where we are. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 just didn't happen. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
There was a lot of things on that particular act that King didn't even agree. First of all, King and Lyndon B. Johnson weren't even on the same page. You know what I'm saying? So when you talk about what you just said was so freaking good, we have to do another episode about this. And it wasn't the goal. But there was so much compromise for us to get where we are. Oh, that was so good, Keenan. That was good.
Let's wrap up.
Guys, we're gonna wrap
35 minutes, but that was good, Keenan.
But we gotta do a part two. You guys wanna do a part two?
Yeah, that was good.
I gotta say that was good.
We didn't even get to the colorism.
Join us next week. We're about to talk about some stuff let me give you a teaser. Next week, we're about to talk about not the oppression of white people, but the oppression of black people on black people.
Yeah.
And we're really going to dive into how we marginalize each other, right? Yeah. We're going to talk about in ways in which we do that. We're about to talk about our own indirect racism towards one another. And whether you believe it or not, white people aren't just the only kind of people that can be racist. We can too. Yeah. You know, and we don't have to be racist against white people. We can be racist against ourselves. And so we're going to talk about that next week. But as we close this episode, right, y'all, like, people are like, man, keep going. Nah, because you ain't going to listen that long. So we got to hurry up. But as we wrap this up, man, I want to add this. I want to add the fact that I don't want us to get so, even listening to this episode, I don't want us to get so bogged down in the suppression of our people that we forget about the celebration of our people.
Man,
we've made so much progress, man. Progress is largely suppressed. It's the story of racial relations over the past half century, man. I think that the news is so focused on the fact about the highlights of what black people are going through that we forget the fact that 40% of African Americans now consider themselves a part of the middle class, right? That now 40% of African Americans now own homes. A figure that has risen by 75%. Especially, man, we need to understand, y'all, because these are the facts that the media seldom report. They think that the black experience is all about the underclass. They continue to define black people to live in public housing and public assistance to live off welfare checks, right? They promote us to live in crime-infested areas. But the real story is that black people have made a lot of progress. And as long as you who are in this black skin, no matter the tone of that skin, understand that your black is beautiful and that your brain is beautiful, your mind is beautiful, you can do anything, man. And so it's crazy that they gave us the shortest month of the year to celebrate, but I ain't even going to get into that. But here's the thing, man. We don't just celebrate 28 days out the year. You black every day.
Amen.
And you got to make ways to celebrate that, man. If that means going to an Ivy League, right? If that means finishing your MDiv, man. Whatever that means for you, define your blackness in your own skin amongst yourself. Don't let nobody else define what that looks like for you, man. My boy on here from Athens. My boy on here from Savannah. Though our name may not be in light, our name is graved in the hearts of those of our lives that matter, and they see that we're making optimal use out of our blackness.
Yes, sir. That's
good. Listen, it's been a good one. It's been a good one. We love y'all.
We love you so much. And so y'all look out for part two. And and watch and listen to this again and again and again and again and share this and download it
again.
Give us some likes and post on your stories and on your IG, your Twit, and all of that. You know,
do you say Twit? Help us out. Is that a thing?
Yeah. It's
listen, help us out. Help us help y'all. If it sound good to y'all, it's gonna sound good to somebody else. So help us, please. We talking about black people.
Right? This boy here looking like a Muslim with his pink durag on, Doc. He's looking like one of them Christians that want to call himself a Hebrew-like Jew or something like that. Like,
got the tunic.
Don't be a Christian trying to be Jew, trying to call himself a Jew.
Episode over.
Y'all block that out.
Got his yarmulke on, Doc.
To the Glass House Podcast.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Keenan.
This is Jarikus, and peace out. Much love, one love, power to the people, and we'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Peace.